First time I've been able to put the jacket on in a long time. It's been so hot every Sunday morning. I've been here since May. Of course, rabbis have to have their jackets. In a moment, I'll tell a story that comes from the historic city of Lublin in eastern Poland. Lublin is where some of the first strikes of what became the Solidarity Movement took place. You remember that back in the 80s that led to the fall of the communist government in Poland? But before that, it had been known as a center of religious learning, and for a time, also of religious tolerance. Often it happened that places were tolerant for a while, then it changed. Yeah, that happened in Poland too. But when it was still on, large communities of both Jews and Polish Brethren were established there in the 16th century. The Polish Brethren are our religious ancestors. They denied the orthodox doctrines of the Trinity and eternal punishment for sinners in hell. So they're sort of ancestors of the Unitarians and the Universalists. When the period of tolerance in Poland came to an end, they and their books scattered in various directions, some to Transylvania, some to Holland, some to England, whence their ideas eventually spread to America. On the Jewish side, Lublin became such a center for both academic Judaism and the practice of Jewish mysticism that it was known as the Jewish Oxford. Here's a story from that mystical tradition called Hasidism. A disciple of the rabbi of Lublin once fasted from one Sabbath to the next. On Friday afternoon, he began to suffer such cruel thirst that he thought he would die. He saw a well, went up to it, and prepared to drink. But instantly he realized that because of the one brief hour he still had to endure until the next Sabbath started, he was about to destroy the work of an entire week. This must mean some kind of work that he's been doing on himself, some kind of spiritual cultivation. But now hear what happens next. He did not drink and went away from the well. Oh, it makes me thirsty. Then he was touched by a feeling of pride for having passed the difficult test. When he became aware of this feeling, he said to himself, "Better I go drink than let my heart fall prey to pride." He went back to the well, but just as he was going to bend down to draw water, he noticed that his thirst had disappeared. When the Sabbath began, he entered his teacher's house. "Patchwork!" the rabbi called to him as he crossed the threshold. The rabbi didn't even pull his beard. He was too busy pointing his finger. "Patchwork! Patchwork? Can you guess what that's about?" "Well, let's work or play with that some more together right after we sing." What are we singing today? Number 90, "From All the Fret and Fever of the Day." I love that hymn. That's such a great introduction to a Sunday morning worship service, what it's supposed to be about. Well, Hasidic masters are sometimes credited with amazing or even supernatural powers. The story also shows us the extraordinary insight that they're supposed to have into the hearts of their followers. The rabbi of Lublin looks into the heart of an earnest young student who has undertaken a week-long fast in order to conquer his pride and cultivate humility. The master perceives at once all of the student's spiritual fits and starts. He wants to conquer pride. He starts making progress, but now he feels pride in his new humility, followed by shame in his new pride. Then he hits a clear patch when he finds that his thirst has vanished. You'd think his teacher would shout hallelujah, but instead he yells out, "Patchwork!" Humility should be whole cloth, I suppose, not just a scrap here and a bit there, loosely stitched with good intentions. It should be a complete garment. But that's one tall order, no matter your height or who's your tailor. Which brings me to a certain t-shirt. I'd just been called to my first position as the minister of an old Universalist church, where if you answered the phone and you said, "Hello, Unitarian Church," you would be covered with honey and then tea and sent to Boston. It was the Universalist Church. The old minister had retired in town after many years of service, too many years, some local colleagues said. I'd been warned by one of them about a disease called old ministeritis, but I was sure that I would be immune. Ministers, you should know, are also highly prone to alcoholism, obesity, depression, and divorce, but I seemed stable on all those fronts. I was sure I'd be able to handle my predecessor, who was still far from deceased. And who was just as certain about being able to handle me? I stopped over for a visit and was greeted by my retired colleague, who was wearing a maroon t-shirt printed with the mathematical formula for trouble. Actually, it was printed with the words, "Oh God, it's hard to be humble when you're from the University of Chicago." I'm sure that was true for someone who had graduated from U of C back in that old minister's day. I had graduated from the same school when a better class of UC students had been rigorously taught to be humble about our greatness. So here's that formula for trouble. T, or trouble, equals UC squared. Two ex-UC students squared off for battle. I forgot to mention high blood pressure in the list of clergy ailments. I won't blame my old colleague for that, though I've sometimes thought about sending along a bill for years of medication that I've taken ever since, especially those years before it went generic. There were no patches on that t-shirt. It was whole cloth. Nor was its owner shy about calling out my weaknesses so that the right ears at church always heard them. It's a long story and not the happiest story of my life. More humility on both of our parts would have helped a lot. I'm sure that humility takes constant cultivation. I'm not so sure about doing it through fasting, but I can see the logic. Hunger brings things close to home. As our energy goes down, we remember that we're not self-contained or self-sustaining. We need things from outside of ourselves just to keep going. Sometimes you can forget that on a full stomach or a full head of beer or caffeine or whatever makes you feel full and confident. But there are other ways to cultivate that sense of humility. And there are other senses that we may also wish to cultivate. I think you all know what I mean, but let me ask to be sure. Is there some sense or attitude or perspective that you try to cultivate? I mean cultivate, not just make a wish and blow out a candle. What is it? Patience? Kindness? Courage? I'd like to give you an opportunity to name it out loud if you feel comfortable doing so. What are you trying to cultivate?
Discipline.
Discipline.
Discipline. I don't have a word for it, but I would say openness, I guess.
Oh. Openness. I understand Bobby's gesture. Openness. Opening her hand. Others?
Perseverance.
Perseverance. Perseverance. With a wonderful smile. I see. Not an easy one.
Doubt.
Doubt. To cultivate doubt. Doubt. Something that needs nurture to be done properly. Yeah. The others?
Quietness.
Quietness.
I'm not sure what to call it. I'm just going to say letting go.
Letting go. It's a good thing to call it. Letting go. Others?
Peace.
Understanding. Understanding.
Empathy.
I don't know how you put all this into a formula, but it would be a good one. It would be a valuable one to share. Well, the Hasidic student in Poland is working on his humility. Now, you remember the technique that he's chosen? Fasting. Very physical. It's how he's working on himself. Fasting plus, I'm sure, careful self-examination. Well, hello there. Would you mind if we just went over someplace?
There you go.
It was a big furry one. I had an opportunity to cultivate, you know, stillness with a terrible itch. Oh boy, thank you. Thank you very much. And you too for your appearance and adding to the October spirit here. Yeah. So he seems to also be very cultivating a self-examination, and there's probably some kind of prayer or meditation that's going on. So we talked about the what. Let's talk a little bit about the how. What kind of work do you do to try to do on yourself, or maybe you'd call it play, to make this happen, to cultivate what you're trying to cultivate? How do you try to do it? Do you fast, meditate, write in a journal? Someone want to share their technique? What's your method?
Notice and redirect.
Notice and redirect. And that was for openness. Notice and redirect. So you notice the window closing, the door is closing?
That's not always good enough.
Gotcha.
Well, I'm trying to cultivate patience.
Patience.
And so when I find myself being impatient, I step back and I take deep breaths.
Yeah. Step back, take deep breaths.
Awareness.
And how? Another very physical, another physical component, right? Like fasting. Others?
Being mindful of your reaction so that you can then do what you want to be presenting.
Being mindful particularly of reactions, with your goal in mind. That's not just reaction.
Being willing to ask for help,
right? Turning to your people, your community, willing to ask for help. Others? Dave?
Yeah, I think a combination of having conversations and improving the skill of conversation.
Okay, a combination of having conversations and improving the skill of conversations, becoming better at conversation, becoming better at being one among others, sounds like. So another one is social. Others? Any more?
Daily ritual.
Right? Most days we don't just live completely haphazardly. Establish some kind of pattern. Well, one more question. After the service today, while you're enjoying our Super Sunday meal, would you be willing to talk more about your practice with others who might be interested, who might have resonated with your inner project? I hope that you will. I'm going to share mine now as a sort of a model. I like to walk and think, walk and sing, and walk and just let things come to me while other things float away. If there's a name for this practice, it's sauntering. Henry David Thoreau, the author of Walden and friend to many great Unitarian and Universalist thinkers of the 19th century, took this practice very seriously. He wrote, "I have met with but one or two persons in the course of my life who understood the art of walking, that is, of taking walks, who had a genius, so to speak, for sauntering, which word is beautifully derived from, quote, from idle people who roved about the country in the Middle Ages and asked for charity under the pretense of going à la Sainte-Terre to the Holy Land, until the children exclaimed, 'There goes a Sainte-Terre, or a Sainte-Terre, a saunterer, a Holy Lander.' They who never go to the Holy Land in their walks, as they pretend, are indeed mere idlers and vagabonds, but they who do go there are saunterers in the good sense, such as I mean." So did you get Thoreau's meaning? Walking must have given him great lungs, because he got all of those words in just two sentences. I'll bet he didn't have to pause for water. To call someone a saunterer was a dig. It was a slight. It was a way of saying, hey, you make as if you're on a pilgrimage to the Holy Land, but you're just loitering and looking for handouts. But Thoreau says that there are some who, when they go walking with no apparent destination, really are trying to reach a sacred place. Yes, they're looking for gifts, but they're also putting in the effort. He continues, "For every walk is a sort of crusade preached by some Peter the Hermit in us to go forth and reconquer this holy land from the hands of the infidels." Now, Peter the Hermit was a wandering monk who has been credited or charged, you could say, by many with instigating the gruesome First Crusade in order to wrest Jerusalem from the control of its Muslim guardians. We avoid crusader language today, and with bloody good reason. But Thoreau was referring to an inner struggle of the same type that young Patchwork had undertaken back in Poland, to liberate the holy place inside from your own internal infidels. Now, an infidel means one who's unfaithful to what's true for you, to the best of your understanding, true in the depths of your heart. Can there be many infidels inside of you, each one living a life of its own in opposition to that truth? Thoreau speaks as if there might be. But all it takes are one or two of them. Take arrogance and despair, which I think change back and forth into each other all the time. I'm Superman one day, a failure the next. First I'm everything, then I'm nothing. But that means everything equals nothing, more mathematics. So now I'm everything again, and round it goes, like the animals in that hut in our children's story. What other infidels? There's ingratitude or casual rage that flares at almost nothing, as opposed to a deep and proper anger and injustice. Any other infidels? Probably shaking their little swords at you right now, saying, "Don't you dare talk." They belong in there. The rabbi would probably like that one. Yes, 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 Patchwork. You could say that sauntering is one part liberate, one part cultivate, and one part simply waiting. Liberating, cultivating, waiting for what? Well, I think I heard the answer coming from a lot of people. Calm. You know, calm is part of it, and I often alter my breathing to help achieve it, drawing a deep one in through my nose and letting it out slowly through tightly pursed lips in a focused stream. Of course, then I'm tempted to whistle. Or in and out through clenched teeth. Nasty to look at and creepy to hear, I'm sure, though I cool it when others are passing by. Calm, yes. And someone said, peace. Peace, which is not quite the same thing as calm. Peace involves perspective. Taking a step back from the last step back, and even from the person taking it. Trying to see how the concerns of the moment matter from the standpoint of the universe and eternity, as well as right here and right now. Peace, in other words, involves meaning a little more than calm does. With peace, we also get into things like forgiveness and acceptance, and I walk to cultivate those things as well. Humility, too. Humility really is difficult, whether you're from Lublin in Poland in the 1700s or from the University of Chicago in the 1940s or the 1970s. So calm, peace, perspective, forgiveness, acceptance, humility. And then, of course, there's insight. Insight about me, insight about this, about us. Something that hopefully I can bring to share with you here. I guess you could say that I saunter all over the place in search of who knows what. Peter the Hermit shouts inside of me, keep moving. There's another infidel. And then I hear my inner rabbi shouting, patchwork! You must be just as close as Peter. May he keep on getting closer. May your inner rabbi keep getting closer too. So may it be.